You are listening to the Happiest Lives Podcast with Jill Lillard, episode number 50.
Welcome to the Happiest Lives Podcast, where you'll learn to think better, feel better, and become the woman God says you already are. Here's your host, Jill Lillard.
Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Happiest Lives Podcast. We are continuing the series today, thinking about what you're thinking about. And last week, we talked about the power of your thought life. What you think matters because that is the fruit you bear in your life. What thoughts you are choosing, maybe you're choosing them intentionally. Maybe they're just happening on default. But when we can pause, consider what it is that we're thinking and what thoughts we want running our lives, it is going to impact the way that we feel. When you have a thought, your brain releases a chemical cascade, which is a feeling, and that feeling fuels your actions, the things you do and don't do. And the things that you do and don't do is going to create some sort of result. And so in this way, your thoughts create your results. The results that you are experiencing in your life reflect what it is that you're thinking. So if you want to know what somebody's thinking, look at the results that they are experiencing in their life. So today we're going to build on this theme about our thought life and talk about thoughts create feelings. And I want to review with you, I want to look at some misconceptions about feelings. And I'm also going to show you a process that I use inside all my coaching groups that will help you feel better. And it might help you create feelings that you enjoy more, feelings that you want to have more of. So in that way, feel better, but also feel better. Know how to feel in a way that is actually serving you rather than your feelings derailing you and running the show. And I also want to show you a concept that I call the four P's that I think is equally as helpful as you navigate emotion. So, a model that I have seen recently, and I feel like I see it a lot in my coaching, is this thought that I have too much to do. My to-do list is long. And a lot of times people will present this to me as though it is a circumstance. I have a long to-do list. They're saying it as though that's a fact, but it's not. A long to-do list is an assessment. When I look at your to-do list, I might not think it's long. You might look at my to-do list and you might think that it's really short and I might think it's long. Our thoughts about our list might be that my list is really long. There's too much to do. I don't have enough time. But the fact is, whether you're focused on the list or the amount of time that you have, we all have the same amount of hours in the day. We all have 24 hours in the day, and we may have a list that we've created of things that we want to do. That would be a circumstance. What you're making that list mean, your assessment of the list is your thought. And so you want to know what you're thinking about it. So notice if you're thinking you have a to-do list, that there's too much to do, that there's not enough time, that that's an optional assessment. And so you could separate that out, the circumstance, I have 24 hours in a day, or the circumstance could be, I have a list of things that I want to do. And then let's look at what you're making it mean, what you're thinking about it. And so one of the gals in my coaching group in the academy had come with this thought that she had a long to-do list. And I challenged her to make that circumstance, I have a list of things to do. And we looked at her thought, which is, it's too much. It's long. The feeling that she was having when she thought this, when she believed the list was long, when she believed it was too much, she felt overwhelmed. Okay, so she had this thought, this assessment of words on paper, a list that she had made, and the feeling was overwhelmed because she was thinking it was too much. I asked her what she did when she felt overwhelmed. What actions did that lead to? What urges did she have from the feeling of overwhelm? When she felt overwhelmed, she realized that she would just start spinning her wheels. Her mind was spinning and she was kind of just going in circles. Quite literally, even around her house, she'd find herself kind of walking around or starting one thing and going to another and really not getting anything done. She would, in many ways, feel paralyzed. She would distract herself and she would buffer by eating food that she wasn't necessarily even hungry for, or getting on her phone, or just even finding other distractions. She had some really important things that she needed to get done, but she might distract herself by doing the laundry even, which seemed like a good thing to do, but it was taking away from the thing that she actually wanted to do. And so she was using it as a buffer and she just would not be able to focus. And the result of this, if we just look at those actions, the result is she proves there is too much to do. She proves that her list is too long. So that's her unintentional model. So we were able to put that on paper, look at it with curiosity so that we could kind of learn. And then when we recognized, when we separated the actual fact that there was a list of things to do from her thoughts, we could see that the thought was optional. The thought, it is too much, was an optional thought. She didn't have to think that. And so she could create another thought. She could think about her list in another way that was going to better serve her. Now she could flip that thought and just think, it's not too much. I have plenty of time to do everything on this list. So she could flip it in that way. Or she could think, it's a lot and that's okay, which might make her be more accepting of that. The thought that she settled on was, God will supply all my needs. And so the to-do list was the circumstance. And her thought, instead of thinking it's too much, her mind went to the Lord, that she had a partner in this. I'm not alone. And God is going to supply whatever it is that I need to do. And that made her feel very thankful. From that feeling of gratitude, she could look at her list. So she already had the list of things she needed to do. And I suggested that she go through each item and see how long she thought it would actually take her to do each thing. And when she did this, she realized, oh, this is actually just a couple hours worth of stuff. And I can totally find a few hours to get this done. And then she could prioritize the tasks, figure out what she was going to get done that day. Now everything just took 2 hours and she had two hours. And so really it wasn't that much. And then she could kind of schedule it, block time, and then just get to work on it. And maybe urges would come up to distract herself and do other things. She could allow those urges to be there and just bring her attention to the tasks at hand. She even used a tactic of setting a timer for 20 minutes so that she could really focus. That helped her focus more and see what she could get done in that 20 minutes of the time that she had allotted. And then just being able to release the parts that she couldn't control. And the result of those actions were that she saw that God was supplying her needs, that she had everything she needed to face her to-do list. So in this example, we can see just by changing a thought, by separating a circumstance, the facts from our thought, evaluating if the thought was helping her, serving her, and then picking a thought that better served her, redirecting her brain, basically saying, hey, brain, it's not too much. God will supply all that you need. It's totally fine. And her brain could say, oh, yeah, that's true. I believe that. And the brain would feel thankful and it would go forward and do the things it needed to do and prove the thought it was thinking. So that is an example of how we can take a thought, we can replace it with a new thought, and that will make us feel different and create better results so that we're not functioning, in this example, from the overwhelm. Instead, she could function from a place of thankfulness and gratitude. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about today is some misconceptions about feelings. I think a lot of us may not have a really good understanding of emotion or what role it plays in our life. Sometimes we're afraid of emotion. But one of the misconceptions I see is that we are choosing between our thoughts or our emotions, that either I'm going to be really logical about this or I'm going to make an emotional decision. And I just don't think that is a helpful way to look at our feelings. When we see that there is a relationship between our thoughts and our feelings, that is going to help us choose thoughts that are going to fuel feelings that are more productive, that are serving us more. And so notice that if you are having a thought and it creates a feeling, rather than thinking, okay, I just need to resist that feeling I'm having, what you want to do is actually recognize the thought that is creating the feeling. So in the example I gave before, if the feeling is overwhelm, you could recognize, oh, the thought is it's too much. Then you could evaluate another thought that you could think, and that's going to create the new feeling. So notice it's not that your thoughts and feelings are at war with each other. There is just different thoughts that may be running the show. And so you may have the flesh versus the spirit. There may be thoughts that are more righteous and holy and good that come from the spirit and thoughts that come more from the flesh. There can be two paradigms that exist. There may be unintentional thoughts that aren't serving you, don't necessarily want to think, and then other thoughts that do serve you. And you may find yourself kind of going in and out of these different models. And so you may have two models that are maybe offering themselves to you. So we could say in a sense they're competing for your attention, but it's not that logic and emotion are opposing one another. Another misconception about feelings is that feelings can harm me. If I go there, if I allow myself to feel something, then that feeling is going to take me under, that it has so much power. Feelings are harmless. They cannot hurt you. It is our response, our reaction to the feeling that causes trouble for us. When we start to resist feeling, when we're trying to push it down and ignore it and trying to simply thought swap to power our way to a new action by swapping our thoughts, or we're trying to force positivity and we're doing that at the expense of dismissing our own feelings, then we might get caught up and stuck in the feeling. And it feels like this feeling has so much power over us. We might also indulge the feeling, because I feel this way, I'm just going to stay in bed all day and I'm not going to do anything. And so we believe to allow the feeling is going to bring harm to us. But the opposite is true. When we allow a feeling to be there without indulging it, without resisting it, we simply allow ourselves to feel it, to notice it, to observe it, to see what it feels like in our body, that causes no harm to us. It is the resisting the emotion, which can lead to buffering behavior, can lead to overeating, spending money you don't have, wasting a lot of time on social media. It can lead to negative behaviors, or behaviors that maybe feel positive in the moment because they bring some relief, but they end up bringing a net negative consequence. That is what harms us. Okay. So noticing the feeling, allowing it to be there, is actually going to serve you, because then you can move through the feeling and you can move into a new thought, not from the energy of resisting the other feeling because you're not willing to feel it. And ultimately that won't serve you. You'll end up in that other feeling. It's kind of like trying to run out of quicksand. You'll end up just sinking. You want to allow the feeling to be there as long as it needs to be there. Then you can take actions from a new thought. A third misconception is that my feelings really shouldn't matter so much. They don't matter. Or if they feel like they do matter to you, you think, well, they shouldn't matter. I need to kind of just get over it. Really, everything that you do, the way God has made us, the way that we're wired, everything we do is to feel something. We want to have some sort of reward. So think about anything that you're pursuing in life. It could be a big goal that you're moving toward. It could just be in general how you want to feel at the end of the day. It could be an interaction with that you are having with somebody. If you really look at what's going on, whether it's intentional or not intentional, you're always trying to feel better. As humans, we are trying to increase pleasure. We're trying to avoid pain, and we want to be very efficient. We don't want to waste a lot of energy. So that is kind of subconsciously what's running on the back burner as we choose different actions and as we pursue any result. So whatever the result is that you're trying to pursue, it's because it's going to create some sort of feeling that you're experiencing. And I've heard people describe feeling as like a vibration in your body, which sounded kind of weird to me, but I'm like, oh yeah, that is totally what it feels like. As I try to pause and tune into what an emotion feels like, as I get curious about it, you can feel certain sensations in your body, which you might describe as kind of a vibration. You might feel it in your chest, your hands, your legs, your feet, your head. but that is how we can observe our feelings and connect with those a little bit. And so how you feel does matter. Your feelings are important. God has made us beautifully, intricately. He has knit us together and he has given us the complexity of emotions. Emotions are from the Lord. And so we don't want to reject those or dismiss those. We want to be curious about those so that our emotions can play the role that God intended them to play in our life. And I think we see that a lot in the Psalms. The Psalms express a lot of emotion, and that emotion becomes a portal. It becomes a gateway that leads the writer of the Psalms, the one who is expressing the emotion, to the Lord. Ultimately, in the end, he turned towards the Lord, and that emotion becomes the portal where he's expressing his desires and asking for the Lord's help, and then moving to a place of more positive emotion, praise and trust and joy. So your feelings do matter. They serve a purpose. Another misconception, a fourth one, is that I should feel happy all the time. So even when I teach you guys the self-coaching model that we use in the process of heart scanning, the goal isn't just to create positive feelings. Like, we're not just trying to eradicate any negative emotion. Those unwanted feelings serve a purpose. And I kind of just said that as I was talking about the role of emotions that we can see in the Psalms. They serve a purpose of deepening our relationship with the Lord. They, when we pause and reflect on what it is we're feeling, we get information about what it is that we're thinking, our observations, how we're engaging with the world and other people. And so you want to be able to pause and get the information from your feelings rather than shoving them down or trying to rush past those. Pause, slow down. Be still, get the information that the feeling is giving you. Help it, let it be a way to look at your mind and see what it is that you are thinking, how you are assessing the world around you. And so we live in a fallen world, and we will not experience the beauty, the perfection that God has created for us until heaven. God gives us foretaste of glory and goodness, foretaste of heaven here on earth, but we will not have our deepest desires and longings satisfied until we go to heaven. And so there is going to be the 50-50. Half the time you're going to feel good, the other half of the time you're not going to feel so good. And that is all right. We want to be able to accept that, to relax into it, and allow all the emotions to be there without tensing up and thinking that we shouldn't feel a certain way. So a process that I give my clients inside of all my coaching programs is the process of feeling. And I use the acronym FEEL. So this is an easy way for you to remember when you have a feeling what it is that you can do. So number one, you want to find the feeling. What is it that you're feeling? Where do you feel that in your body? You know, maybe you want to go ahead and put a name to that feeling of what you think that is. This is where like a feelings list can really come in handy, because sometimes you may be experiencing emotion, but if you don't really pause and get curious about it, if you're used to just kind of breezing by it, or if you're one who tends to go to sentences and thoughts rather than feelings, you may struggle with that a little bit. So getting a feelings list can be helpful. So a feelings list is just one word: happy, sad, frustrated, indignant, intolerant, lonely. Those are all examples of feelings. And there are thousands and thousands of feelings, that words out there that we could pick. But if you could just find a simple feelings list, which I do provide to all the people inside of my coaching groups, that can help you pinpoint and find the emotion. The next thing is you want to experience the feeling. Psalms 4:4 says, "Be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts on your beds and be silent." So I think experiencing an emotion is a way that we pause it and we allow it to be there without reacting from it. So a lot of times with the feeling of anger that's referenced in the Psalms, a lot of times as Christians, we think we shouldn't be angry. Then we might feel the feeling of anger, and then we might add an additional secondary feeling on top of that, one of shame or guilt. And we may push through that without really getting the information. And yet anger can really serve us. It can give us information of how we're perceiving the world, what we believe. It can help us see when maybe God's righteousness has even been violated. And so if we can be angry without sinning and slow down and be silent, laying on your bed, perhaps, I love when you want to experience a feeling, the idea of sitting down or laying down. To experience a feeling, we want to be able to stop what it is that we're doing, which I know you can't do in the middle of every moment. But if you ever are able to, if you're overcome by a really strong feeling, or even if you have some silent feelings there that you want to get more curious about, setting a timer for 10 minutes and sitting down and taking a breath and just getting curious about what you feel inside of your body, what that feeling feels like, will benefit you so very much. And I think sitting down, laying down is a great way to do that because you allow the weight to move down into your bottom. You know, it allows you to kind of anchor yourself rather than your energy being so kind of up in your fingertips and on the edge of your body where you're kind of on the edge of your seat. So to experience the feeling, just getting quiet and still and getting curious about what the feeling actually feels like. What does it feel like to feel angry right now? What does it feel like to feel lonely? What does it feel like to feel hurt? Where do I feel that in my body? And so you're just observing it. Your brain will offer different thoughts about the situation that's causing the feeling. Just allow those thoughts to be there. Let them drift like clouds and bring your attention back to what you are feeling inside your body. And you might want to be able to find words to describe what those physical sensations are like, much like you would a doctor asking you questions about what you're experiencing inside your body. So first you find the feeling, you experience it. And then the second E is explain. And I think we're explaining the feeling and we're also kind of evaluating it. And this is where we use the model where we could look at, you know, what is the circumstance? What was my thought? Why am I feeling this feeling? And so you could start right there. Why am I feeling this feeling? And something might come up and you want to ask yourself, is that a fact or is it just, an assessment that I'm having. So you can separate what is the fact, what am I making the fact mean? So in the case that I gave in the beginning, the circumstance would be the to-do list. The thought would be, it's too much. I don't have enough time. And then you could look at it creates the feeling of overwhelmed. Then you want to get really curious about how you show up. I think this is so important to be able to own our own behaviors, our own actions, to take responsibility for ourselves in a situation. A lot of times we get our energy so focused on the circumstance, what is happening to us, what somebody else said or did, and we start to feel like a victim and we get really powerless. A lot of times we don't move to our own actions. What am I thinking? What am I feeling? And when I feel that way, what are the things that I do. I like for my clients to be able to identify three or four actions that they take that is coming from that feeling. Now, they may be going in and out of different models, but I like to say, what are the urges when you feel overwhelmed? What is your urge when you feel angry? What are the urges that you have when you feel hurt? And so a lot of times those actions will include some sort of buffering, things that we do to soften the emotion so we don't have to feel it so much to kind of quiet the vibration. We may buffer to create more comfort, to increase our pleasure, to dull the pain. And so that will oftentimes be part of the action that we're choosing. We may use distractions to buffer. And so you want to look at what those actions are. And then you want to be able to see what result does that create. And that's going to, once again, prove what it is that you're thinking. In the model example I gave before, when you're thinking it is too much, the result you end up creating is you prove it is too much. So in this acronym, you find it, you experience it, you explain it, and then you want to evaluate it. Look at that thought. Is that thought serving me? Is it serving me? Is it producing good things when I am thinking that it's too much? Is that helping me or is it not helping me? And we can see in this model, it's really not helping. It's just creating feelings of overwhelm, which leads to unproductive actions. As you evaluate it, I think another helpful question to ask, is it righteous or unrighteous? So in regard to maybe our anger, we want to be able to discern, is this a righteous anger or is it an unrighteous anger? And so a righteous anger would imply that God's glory is somehow being stolen, that God would be upset about this as well, that his image bearer, someone that he created, is maybe being mistreated. And so we might have a righteous anger about that. And so I might want to keep that anger. My goal is not to feel neutral about everything. I don't want to just feel good about everything that happens, right? So if something happens to someone I love, if my husband dies, my children die, I want to feel sad about that. If somebody is mistreating somebody else, if somebody's not taking responsibility for their behaviors, I don't want to feel neutral about that. I do want to have a sense of right and wrong. I want to have a sense of discernment discernment in what is good and pleasing to the Lord. I just don't want that to be elevated into my own arrogance, pride. And I think that's where our judgment, we can be discerning. And so we may have judgment on what is righteous and what is unrighteous based on God's word. But when that, kind of swells up into arrogance and pride, then we may fall in kind of to the same sins, right? So we want to have a sense of humility, a sense of gentleness, a sense of love, even as we confront sin, if that is what we feel like the Lord is leading us to do. But stepping back a little bit to what we're actually talking about right now, in evaluating that emotion, we want to ask, is it righteous or is it unrighteous? And I think an unrighteous feeling would be one that you're feeling because your glory has somehow been diminished, you know, that you don't feel like you're getting the accolades that you feel like you deserve, or your desires have not been met, that you feel maybe a sense of entitlement. So as you move through this process of feeling, finding it, experiencing it, then explaining and evaluating it, the last part is letting go. And by letting go, I think it is really just moving into trusting the Lord with that feeling, that we're not clinging to it so tightly, and we're not trying to control everything. And so we can be tempted to hold on to hurt, which can turn into bitterness, sadness that can turn into anger. We may be tempted to hold on to anger that we feel is righteous and justified. But what happens is when we're holding so tightly to it and we're putting the control in our own hands, we will try to control things. We will want to cause harm and destroy things. If someone hurt us, we may not even directly confront them, but we might slander their name. We may talk bad about them to other people. And that's our attempt to control and destroy. We want to consume. Our fleshly nature wants to consume things. And so we might take vengeance into our own hands. And so then we start moving into unrighteousness ourselves. The alternative to this is really trusting the Lord and that our hearts are really bound to His. We're staying connected to Him and letting Him lead the process. And we're following Him and being obedient to Him. And so to do that in our situation, we can remember God's past faithfulness, that He is good. Remember His character, that He is faithful and good. He is our protector. He avenges righteousness. He is just and He is merciful. And though He is just, He's not going to tolerate unrighteousness forever. He is also patient and gracious and merciful, and He's slow to anger. His goal is always to move people toward repentance, because that becomes the pathway to a relationship with Him. He wants all of us to have a relationship with Him. And so that should be our role within the body as well. So when we trust the Lord, when we let go, we are able to lie down and sleep. You know, when you're angry and hurt, it can be hard to sleep because your mind is just stewing and fixating on the situation. But when really, when you go through this process of allowing yourself to feel the feeling, explaining it, evaluating it, and then really trusting the Lord, letting go, you can lie down and you can sleep because you are trusting in the Lord who is sovereign and good. And really, He's in control of all circumstances. You don't have to be able to control circumstances, nor can you. He has given you free will to think and feel and do certain things, but you can't control the circumstances. You can't control other people, but we can trust that He is in control of everything and that He will lead us and guide us and direct us. And so we can kind of take our time in processing through that anger or hurt, anxiety, whatever emotion it is that's coming up for you. And then I think part of that letting go is trusting that God can use us as agents of righteousness to further His name and help lead others to repentance. And so as we wait on Him and we submit to His leading and we're willing to release and let go and be used by Him, He might call you to confront sin, but He will want your heart to be humble and gentle and that you're doing so in a spirit of compassion and love. And that is so very important. And that's why I think this process is so helpful. When you invite the Holy Spirit into that, He is going to equip you and help you do that. We talk about a concept inside my coaching groups. I teach the heart scan process. And so part of that is we do these models that I've referenced today. But in between your unintentional model and your intentional model, you know, where you are and where you want to be, is the SOS. So that is your sea of suffering. That is your sea of surrender. And so I think there's I encourage people to move into their suffering and in their pain, to kind of push into it. I talk about pushing into the thorn, so that you really can surrender to the Lord. But I'd like to differentiate between two types of suffering. There is an unproductive suffering and there is a productive suffering. There's a righteous suffering and an unrighteous suffering. When we are fixated, when we're suffering and we are just kind of consumed with ourself, we're suffering because we feel like a victim of our circumstances, that is not a helpful suffering. A productive suffering is one where we're allowing ourselves to quit controlling the whole wide world, to let circumstances be what they are, because we can't control all those things. But we're allowing ourselves to feel the pain of living in a fallen world, the hurt, the sadness, the sorrow, and we're leaning into the Lord. We are pushing into the suffering in a way that is productive because it helps us to surrender and release and do this last part of the feeling process, which is being able to let go. So some emotion that I've been experiencing the past few weeks, I have been sick for a while, for a few weeks now. I had 4 chronic nosebleeds and my nose really hasn't stopped bleeding. It kind of just keeps seeping. And I go to an ear, nose, and throat specialist tomorrow. So I'm thankful for that. I did go to the ER last week because I had so much blood. I know this is gross, gushing down the back of my throat and gushing out the front, and it just wouldn't stop. It was bad. And I ended up going to the ER, and they were able to help me get the bleeding to stop. But on top of that, I mean, there was the bleeding, but there was also just this extreme pressure I've been experiencing in my jaw, in my teeth, in my nose, in my eyeballs, and my hearing is clogged. And it's been going on for a while. He even gave me an antibiotic at the ER. But when I was there at the ER, I felt discouraged because I went there hoping they would cauterize it. My mom had something like this when she was my age too, and they ended up cauterizing it, and that ended up helping. But because it was so high up, they didn't have the tools to do that. And that's where he wanted to get me to the ear, nose, throat specialist. But when they had my nose, they had this clamp on my nose. I could not breathe. I already have not been able to breathe. And just breathing through your mouth, my mouth was just felt so dry. And you know, all the pressure I felt in my head, it just almost got a panicky feeling sitting there. And then hearing, my hope was that my circumstance was going to change, that he was going to cauterize it and I'd be able to go back to work and kind of resume life. But he talked about putting a pack up there, a pack that I would have to wear for 3 days and then get into the ear, nose, and throat specialist. And then they could figure out what they were going to do. They would have the tools to cauterize it that he didn't have. He was afraid he'd poke a hole if he tried to do that. So, when he told me that, I wasn't exactly sure what was going on, but as I sat there in the room by myself, as they went on to attend others there in the ER, and I was supposed to sit there for 20 minutes or so with this clamp on my nose, I just almost started to panic. I started feeling very trapped, because I was thinking, I don't know when this is going to end. I felt like I had lost my hope that we're just going to get this over with so I can move on. And the thought of leaving with a pack of stuff shoved up my nose, I had been shoving tampons up my nose to stop the bleeding before I went to the ER, just felt so discouraging, especially with all the pain and pressure I was just feeling in my head. It was just a very powerless feeling because I felt like I wasn't in control and I felt very trapped. So as I sat there, I could just feel myself tensing up and just feeling overwhelmed with emotion. And so I slowed down. As I sat there, I took some breaths and I tried to identify, okay, what is it that I'm feeling? And I was able to identify the word trapped. Okay, why am I feeling that way? And it's the thought was I'm not in control. And also I think this thought of, I don't know when this will end. There's not a quick answer. I'm going to have to feel this way for a while, which made me feel very powerless. So I was able to do that. And then I was able to kind of just breathe. But I was able then to also shift my thought to, okay, I may not be in control. I may be powerless to fix my body and the doctor's not doing what I want him to do. That's not the remedy right now. I don't know when I'm going to be able to breathe clearly again or not worry about blood gushing out. But I trust God is in control. And I really believe that. And when I would say, so I was kind of sitting there breathing and I would say, God is in control. God is in control. And as I did that, I could slow down my breathing release what I couldn't control, just be there in the moment and just kind of release knowing what the future held. And so I was willing, a willingness to feel the discomfort, to feel the, you know, maybe even feeling trapped, to feel the sense of being powerless and sink into that. Okay. And so sometimes you can only hold on to that for a few minutes, right? The other thoughts will start offering themselves and you'll feel everything tensing up again as that feeling of panic or overwhelm comes over you. But that is kind of the process of feeling. Okay. So they did get the bleeding under control. Where I am right now is I start feeling discouraged because I'm like, how long, oh Lord, when will this end? Which then I think, okay, some people are dealing with cancer and chronic illnesses and chronic pain. And so this is nothing. This is a small thing. It will end. I don't think this is going to be my life condition, but some people are dealing with life conditions that they have to really give over to the Lord every day. And so this really helped me to even putting that in perspective. You know, I don't want to dismiss or minimize what I'm experiencing, but letting it just be a reminder what other people live with. You know, I can't imagine people who are blind or can't hear, you know, just maybe that feeling of feeling trapped. And so of just feeling grateful that this is something that I will probably move on from, right? But in the moment, it feels terrible and you do feel trapped and you do feel powerless. But I'm trusting the Lord with that and just releasing, leaning into that sense of my own finiteness. And so that's what it looks like to kind of allow an emotion to be there. Notice I'm not just trying to power my way to a new thought and just saying, okay, God is in control. I didn't jump to that by bypassing what it was that I was feeling. I needed to allow myself to feel the feeling so that I could move there. And so this, hopefully this process is something that you feel like you can apply to your life in different things that you are experiencing. Oh, and one last thing, the four P's, panic, pause, pray, and praise. When you feel a sense of panic, and you can insert any feeling there, any intense emotion, a lot of times we'll feel an emotion and then we'll start to panic over it. If you can hit the pause button and allow yourself to feel the feeling and process through that, allow it to just be there, I think that moves us into a state of prayer. And once again, this is kind of like we see in the Psalms all the time. There are so many Psalms that says, how long, O Lord, how long will this be going on? We might feel that God has forgotten us, that he's hidden his face from us, that someone's been treated unfairly, that I am at risk, anxious, sorrowful, whatever emotion it is that's coming up for you. But we can hit the pause. We can cry out to God, Lord, this is how I am feeling. And then we can pray for his intervention. We can pray specifically that God, that you would redeem this situation, that you would intervene, that you would stop the pain, that you would, for me in this situation, Lord, that you would help me to breathe, that you would give the doctor's guidance and wisdom. And then we can move from prayer to praise. And thank you, God, that you are good and faithful, that you have always been good to me. Thank you that you want good things for my life. Thank you that you use all these things to bear good fruit. Thank you for giving me more compassion for maybe what other people experience on a daily basis. Thank you for slowing me down, binding my heart to yours so that I can be a better person, that I can stay close to you in all the things of life. So even though I don't like this situation, I trust you with it and I trust that you are doing good. God is in control, okay? So we can push in, we can slow down, we can allow things to be there without resisting or fighting those things. So if you are interested in doing any more of this work, this is what we do inside Clarity and Courage. We have a new concept every month, which goes along with the podcast. Inside Clarity and Courage, you'll get a little lesson. You'll get a worksheet that's going to help you apply this to your life and situation. And you're going to get opportunities to get coaching. You can come to a group coaching call where I will coach you on a specific situation. I will show you how to apply this. I will walk you through it. Or you can come to the coaching call as an observer. You can sometimes even get more out of being an observer on a coaching call than you would if you were the person being coached. So group coaching is so very powerful. It reminds us we're not alone. We're all in it together. We're all going through things. And inside in Clarity and Courage, you will find that it is, you know, we're real. We talk about real things. We talk about pain and problems, but it is in a very uplifting and authentic and encouraging and God glorifying way. We also have the worksheet workshop. You can bring your worksheet to the workshop and Coach Stephanie, she will facilitate that call and give you a chance to connect with other Christian women inside that group. So join Clarity and Courage. It's $49. You can join anytime. You can cancel anytime. And when you join, you get access to a whole library of courses and worksheets and application and call replays. So hopefully I'll get to meet some of you inside there. We always have new people joining and I'm always excited to meet and see a new face. So thank you guys for listening today. Next week, we're going to talk about that your feelings fuel actions. So we touched on that a little bit today, how you are feeling is going to fuel certain actions in your life. But in review, let me just say in review about today, remember your thoughts create feelings that fuel actions, which we'll talk about next week. Your feelings are harmless. Your feelings are an invitation to engage with God. Life is 50-50. This isn't our home. We will get foretaste of heaven here, but we're not going to feel happy all of the time. And remember the process to feel. You find the emotion, you experience it, you explain it and evaluate it, and then let it go. Thank you guys for listening. I'll talk to you next week.
If you enjoyed this podcast, I would love to help you take this concept and apply it. Join me in Clarity and Courage, my cost-effective coaching program for Christian women. Each month, receive the tools you need to apply the concepts and grow. We will meet on a live coaching call where you can ask me anything. Plus, you get access to the worksheet workshop where you can have conversations with other women just like you. Learn more and sign up at myhappyvault.com/clarityandcourage.